What's up and welcome to the Single Player Experience. I'm your host, Sebastian Malden, and today I'm hyped as hell. Not even gonna lie to y'all today, I'm super hyped. Here's why. In this episode of the show, we have a very special guest with us today. It's Britton Vanderbush. Britton is a senior animator for PlayStation. What's up? Let's go. He's going to talk about the single player games that he recommends, his journey to becoming a video game animator, and he's going to give advice on how you can become an animator as well. All this and more on this episode of the Single Player Experience. Hit the beat. This is the Single Player Experience, the podcast that helps single player gamers manage their video game backlog. I'm your host, Sebastian Malden, and my main quest is to help you manage your ever-growing video game backlog by letting you know which single-player games are worth your time and money so that you can have the best single-player experience. Now, without further ado, let's start the show. DJ, cut the beat. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said in the intro, we have a very special guest with us today. He is the senior animator at PlayStation. Let's go. He's worked on projects like Horizon Forbidden West, Star Wars, Jedi Fallen Order, and The Last of Us Part 2. This is the one, the only, Britton Vanderbush. Britton, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
Oh, so good. So happy to be here.
Man, that glad to have you on the show.
Stellar intro. I feel so hyped.
I wanted you to. You're like a AAA guest. I wanted you to feel that intro, so I had to like raise it up a notch. So for the people who may not know you, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yes, my name is Britton Vanderbush. I am a senior animator, as you said, at PlayStation Studios Visual Arts in San Diego. So we mostly service all other PlayStation studios, mostly working on cinematics. So if they have work that needs to be done, whether it's, you know, this is how I've had a chance to work on like The Last of Us 2 and Horizon. If it's Guerrilla, if it's Naughty Dog, whoever it happens to be, they'll come to us and say like, hey, we have extra work that we need done. Can you make it look as pretty as humanly possible? And that's what we do. So I live in San Diego. I've got two cats, an amazing wife named Annie, and life is pretty good.
So before we get into the meat of everything, I know everyone's dying to know, what's the name of the cats?
Oh, thank you for asking. Carmen and Ella.
Ah, okay. Like Carmen San Diego.
Carmen San Diego. We got her at a shelter here downtown. It was like right after shelters had opened up after COVID. And we were like, we need something new in our lives. And there's like the city's still mostly shut down. So we just went and got a cat.
Dude, that's dope. That's dope. So have you ever had any like animals in your life, or is this like the first pet?
Oh, tons. Yeah. Okay. No, all throughout my life. Always had pets.
So, okay.
They're the newest family members and the last ones for a while. I don't think we need to add more.
I feel you. So let's pivot to video games. What are your top five games of all time? And let me ask you, is Stray amongst them? Because you're a cat person.
Ah, good question. I have not actually played Stray yet.
What?
I downloaded it and then I got really sucked back into Cyberpunk. So
okay. It
was having like that resurgence and I was like, I got to go back to Night City. So no, I haven't played that yet. Top five games. I'm going to put Uncharted 2 right up on the list. That was one of the first games that got me interested in game development. It was the first thing I played on my PS3 when I got it. It was also the first game that ever made me cry. It's not even that emotional of a game, but like, I got to the end, the credits rolled, and there's like that beautiful cinematic. It like pulls back and Nate and Elena are like standing on the like edge looking out at this beautiful view.
Mm-hmm.
And the music's playing. And I was like, I accomplished something. Like, it was beautiful. And I was like, how do they make this stuff? So that got me interested in this. That just stays at one of my top five for sure. It's also just one of the most cinematic things I'd ever
played
up to that point. Yeah.
The whole series is a banger, and the cinematics on those are like, because Uncharted 4 has moments where it looks like a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Naughty Dog is really great at capturing that.
Oh, they are. Fantastic.
So that's definitely up there on the list. I got to put Tomb Raider on there too, like the original Tomb Raiders. Like
PlayStation 1 Tomb Raider?
PlayStation 1. Okay. Because that's what I grew up playing. I'd like watch my dad play it all the time. And I remember seeing, it's another thing that I think influenced my career, because I remember seeing like a little mini behind the scenes documentary on how they made it, like how they built an environment. And it made me realize, oh, there's people that make this stuff. And that was pretty cool. And I found that on YouTube a while back. And it's crazy to watch it now and be like, oh, the graphics were terrible. It's just like blocks and boxes.
Mm-hmm. But back then it was like modern day tech, though. You know?
Oh, yeah. Astounding. Mind-blowing stuff. It was just the idea that we could make things move in real time in 3D space was next level cool, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
It's still really cool.
It really is. It really is. I always have the theory like animations come so far right now, and you can speak to this way better than I could, but like animations come so far, but back then like it was more imagination like that we had to use because like animation wasn't as crisp as it is today.
Right. No, that's a really good point. I think that's definitely true. It made you kind of work your mind a little harder and really imagine this world. Like when I think back about those kinds of games, I think about, like, I imagine them sometimes looking as good as like the cinematics did.
Yeah.
Like, the cinematics on the original Tomb Raider, they're all pre-rendered. They're just like video files. Mm-hmm. And even they aren't that great now.
No.
But back then, like, I don't know, it fleshed out the world. That's the role cinematics played. I think it made you imagine this is what it's supposed to look like. And then when you're playing, you let your imagination take over and fill in the spaces that the technology couldn't catch up to.
Yeah. Like I've always had that thought to where like older games felt more like akin to books, whereas like new games now feel more akin to movies or anime.
Great way to put it. Yeah. I agree completely. And there's almost like an element of it that there's more participation in a way because you're having to fill in those blanks.
You know, yeah, for sure. Better,
but also a disconnect. Like I feel just as magical playing a game now, like just as in the world as I did back then, but they're really leaving nothing to the imagination.
Exactly.
It's on the screen. If you can imagine it, you can create it now.
Yeah, for sure. So what is the third game?
Third game. Ooh. Spider-Man.
Okay.
Insomniac Spider-Man 2018. Yeah, 2018. That blew me away. One of the most fun things I've ever played. I probably played it four times through and unlocked just about everything. I'm close to the platinum on that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a really fun platinum, too.
Yeah, that's up there. They did such a good job. I loved Spider-Man that came out in, like, 2002, 2004 on the PS2, where you could actually swing around, like, the full city, and it was awesome. Loved that. I'd play that for hours, and this gave me that feeling again. Like, going back and playing that PS2 Spider-Man didn't have the spark that it had when I was, you know, 10 years old, or however old I was when it came out. But now, this gives me that again, you know? And you can really feel, like, the speed of the swings and the excitement of it and the music. I love the way the music works with the animation, and they just did it perfectly. Yeah, big fan of that. So I know what one of them is, but I want to save it for last.
Okay.
Trying to find what goes in front of it in my mind. Maybe I only have four.
It's okay if you only have four.
I got to put The Last of Us Part 2 up there, no matter who hates me for it.
I love the game. I absolutely love the game. Some of the stealth mechanics in that game are like, man, I think is like the cream de la cream of stealth.
Yes. Yeah. They did a great, great job with that. Gameplay team was incredible. I played it a little bit. I only went while in development, only got my hands on a controller a couple times, which I don't like to know how it's going to feel before the game comes out. So if I can avoid that, I do. I like to like get a little taste of it. Like the game I'm working on now, can't say what it is, but like,
okay,
I'm super, super excited for it. It's going to be great. And I got to like hold the controller and play it for like 15 minutes. And then I was like, I got to stop. I want to be surprised. I like put it away. And I just go back to working on the art.
So let me ask you a question. When you get a feel for like games like that, do you feel like getting a feel for a game you're developing for the PS, like that you developed for the PS4, and then getting a feel for like the PS5 with the DualSense, is that like a remarkable difference to you? Because like I think the DualSense is one of the most like revolutionary game controls I've ever played with as far as feel goes.
Yes. I'll say that is why I prefer gaming on PlayStation right now.
It's
the feeling of it. Best controller I've ever had. I don't think it's utilized enough or well enough yet because it's capable of doing so much. Astro's Playroom.
Oh, magnificent.
Anyone hasn't played it, play Astro's Playroom. It is the best. I mean, that game really exists to like show off what the controller can do.
Mm-hmm.
And it does such a good job of it. And the things they do in that, I haven't experienced in a lot of games that have come out since.
At all.
Yeah, but the possibility is there that they can make it feel immersive. I mean, like in Horizon Forbidden West, they did a really, really good job. I love that when it rains, you can feel the raindrops like all over the controller. Mm-hmm. That's so cool to me. And it makes it just ever so slightly more immersive, so much more immersive.
It really it's does.
Like the same feeling you get when like rain's falling on your clothes, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, you're not getting wet, but you feel like the little droplets hitting you. Perfect. I love that.
Man, I completely understand. So you gave us your top four games of all time. Like out of those, is Last of Us Part II probably the number one?
It's the number one.
Okay, that's good.
It's because, you know, I tried not to include games that I work on in that list. But because I did work on it, it has such a special place, you know, in my heart. It is so meaningful. I mean, it's really about grief. And I don't think that as a society, we are prepared to handle grief in really helpful ways. And it just puts us one step closer to being able to do that, to be in touch with our humanity and all the things that we feel when things happen in life that we don't want to happen. And I mean, on top of that, the gameplay is just butter smooth and so much fun. I played through it several times and since it came out, and it's my favorite. My favorite to play as a fan and one of my favorite things to work on too.
I understand that completely. I've been saying for a while that I feel like PlayStation right now has a theme of grief. Like a lot of the games have that underlying theme of grief because you have like Spider-Man, both Miles Morales and Spider-Man 2018 have an underlying theme of grief and how characters react to grief, and that pushes their motivations forward. Ghost of Tsushima has that element as well. If you look at Horizon doesn't quite have that element of grief like the other ones do, but like the first one did. Like the first one did have an element of grief that shaped and determined and made her who she is. But like I also, you look at like games like a lot of The Last of Us 1 and 2 are, you know, very much have that, like that's the center point of the game, is like how grief shapes the different characters and shapes who they are and then their reactions going forward. So it is like, I think that's a big underlying theme for PlayStation this last, I guess you could say, generation.
It is. It really is. And I think it's because there's such emphasis on creating emotionally impactful games. Mm-hmm. Things that, I mean, really stir up emotions and make you think and make you feel. Pixar's really good at that too. And most of their stories involve grief as well, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's also because grief touches everybody. And it's, you know, art reflects the needs that we have in life. And I think that there's a need to talk about those things because most of us don't know how to.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Let's pivot to something different, though. Okay. Let's talk about your career, like your career path. What inspired you to become an animator?
Right. Okay. I wanted to be a magician. And I did that for several years. I traveled with a touring magic show. I used to do kids' birthday parties and stuff, you know, in my hometown, and practiced it constantly. There's something about like the art of it and sparking wonder in people. And telling a story visually. And I think that relates to animation and how I kind of made that transition. And I traveled with this magic show for years and then realized like, that's all I know how to do. I left home when I just turned 17 and I finished school a bit early and just like went on the road and started traveling with all these random people doing shows all over the country. Really, really fun. And it was great. But I hit a point where I was like, I need to learn something new. I always wanted to do art. My dad is an amazing artist. And I think he always like really pushed me to, you know, be good at it and encouraged me to try it. And he'd teach me little drawing techniques. But I just had an internal imposter, you know, like I had an imposter syndrome from a young age. So I thought if he's that good and I'm only this good, I can never be as good as him. So I just kind of like pushed it aside. No fault of him. It was just like, I didn't think I could be good enough to do art. And I didn't think that going into college either. But I had moved to Florida. I was working at Disney World. I got a job there because I was like, I just need to do something fun. Mm-hmm. There was a school in Florida called Full Sail University that I knew their students had been like working on every major movie and video game and producing incredible music and all kinds of stuff. And I had friends like recommend I check it out and seen advertisements for it everywhere. And I just kind of, I ignored it for a bit. And then I hit a point where I was like, I don't want to get stuck working at Disney World forever. Like, as fun as that is, I was like, I could see myself doing this forever, but I don't want to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was at a point in life where I was like, if I don't try to do something different and big now, I'm never going to do it. So I'm just going to take a chance and I'm going to try to go to school for art and focus on animation. Because animation was like, I realized that was the thing I really loved. Animated movies, video games, all that kind of stuff. Uncharted 2 had really inspired me at this point. So went and toured Full Sail. I was like, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to be. And just pushed myself to be a good artist. So I hope that maybe helps somebody who's listening. If you don't think you're good enough, you can make yourself good enough.
Yeah.
I think you can build the skills that you need to do the thing you want to do. Not everything is, you know, a God-given gift. Like, not every... I think your ability to reach your goals and achieve the things is the gift, but you're not born, you know, Mozart playing the piano instantly. There's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be a point where you have to adapt to the thing that you're trying to do. So, you know, the brain is very... The neuroplasticity is a real thing. You can really adapt and change things. And the more you practice, go to sleep every night, you'll wake up better the next day. And that's what happened for me with art. I just really focused. And also, when you sign a paper that says you're going to pay somebody, you know, $60,000 for your
really
education.
Really motivated.
Yeah. It motivates you. Yeah, you're like, I got to get moving. So that was a big help.
I understand completely. You know what's funny is, like, I never really heard of Full Sail University until, like, I was huge into wrestling, and there was a show called NXT that was, you know, shot and a lot heavily produced at Full Sail University.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
like, that came on, it put it on my radar, and all of a sudden now I hear, like, so many creators who are coming out of Full Sail University now.
Yeah, so it's like, really cool. I remember they would do, John Cena would just be on the campus, like, before I knew who he was. And students used to get really excited about it. You could go watch, like, the wrestling, the matches and everything.
Yeah.
I never did it, but it happens right there on the campus. And the film students are the ones behind the camera filming it, and audio production. They're the ones, you know, doing the sound. It's just, it's really, really cool. It's a working studio.
Yeah. There's a lot of dope things coming out of that university.
There are. And when I got hired at PlayStation, there's a little bit of a journey before we get there. But when I got hired at PlayStation, the guy who did my interview, his name is Doug Hagstrom. He's amazing. He's been at PlayStation for 21 years, and actually his last day was yesterday.
Oh, wow.
He was really instrumental in helping me build my career up to this point. But he also was an alumni of Full Sail.
Oh, that's really cool.
Alumnus. Yeah, and he went there. My lead, when I started working at PlayStation, he went there, I think, on my first project with Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order at PlayStation, which
is really cool.
Huge one to kick off things on. And I think 13, when I started working at the studio, like, I counted one day, like, within, from my desk, I could look around and see 13 other people, either their offices or their, you know, cubicles, who went to Full Sail.
That's so really cool.
Yeah. They really do a good job of preparing students for the real world. I don't mean to make this an ad for my school.
No, it's all cool. It's a really cool topic to talk about, especially since we're, like, hitting the 1 minute mark right now.
Right.
So no, it is a really dope school there. And I really, you know, it's really cool to see so many creators that actually get, like, real tools to use in the profession, because, like, I think, not to be, like, super critical about college, but, like, a lot of the, like, complaints for a lot of people is that, like, they don't necessarily get the exact tools they need when they join the workforce. Whereas, like, that university really prepares people for what they're going to be doing, like, in their area of expertise, you know?
That is so true. Yeah, I remember they're always teaching you the most up-to-date software and getting you, you know, working on the stuff that's actually being used in studios. So there was a day I was taking, I can't remember what class it was. I feel like it was visual effects or something. And the teacher came in. We'd been learning throughout the month how to use a specific software. And they were like, all right, so we just learned that all these studios just switched to this different software. So we're going to start using that now and throw this out because nobody's going to be using this anymore. So we just had to learn how to use the new stuff, which is exactly what you would do in a production environment. If you're working in a studio and they say, all right, you have to use this new thing, you just got to adapt to it.
That's so good. That's true.
So yeah, there's a real emphasis on making sure that what you're learning is actually going to be useful for you in the real world. Which not every school does a good job at, but Full Sail really did. So I got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you were talking about your road as an animator. You mentioned that Jedi Fallen Order was your first big project. What was it like to work on a massive project like that, like immediately right out of the gate?
Oh, it was huge. I'd done some small things before that, like some work on some short films.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and forth in school between being an animator and a modeler. And I think it was still the imposter syndrome thing where I was like, I don't think I'm good enough at animation, like understanding movement to really get this down. But I know that I'm good at modeling and creating props and environments. So I switched back and forth. And then maybe 6 months before I graduated, I was like, I'm locked in on animation. I'm just going to focus on that and make a good reel. So I made a demo reel and I got hired by this small company first that was it was just a little startup. And we were working on Disney Junior shorts. So I don't know if any of the stuff I ever did ended up on TV, but it was like little kids cartoons and cute stuff. And it was simple animation. There's not a lot of pressure to make it, you know, perfect. But I put my all into it. And I was only there for 3 months and the studio that I was working at shut down.
Oh, no. Which,
yeah, often happens with startups.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple weeks later, PlayStation reached out to me, which was really awesome. And it was, I had applied it. I know this isn't directly answering your question, but I'm
kidding. No, this is good.
I'd applied for probably 100 animation jobs at different studios all around the world and got tons of rejections and lots of no responses, which is common. And
yeah,
it doesn't mean you're bad at what you're doing. It just means there's not a specific space that they need you to fill at that time. I mean, when they're looking at artists, they're often looking to hire for specific projects.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're looking for something very specific in your animation. Maybe somebody who's focused on like facial animation, you know, who's really good at that because they need people who are good at facial animation at the time. And if your animation can be amazing and show off amazing body mechanics, but if it's not, if the facial stuff isn't there, it's just, you're not what they're looking for. So like that's a lot of what it is. You just have to keep going until you get the thing. But yeah, so then when Full Sail reached out to me and said, hey, PlayStation's looking for animators and they've come to us. Would you be interested in this position? We think you'd be great, which is awesome. They're kind of, their career development department has this really nice relationship with studios.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, thinking nothing would come of it. And it worked out. So it was really good. But then getting hired, I had no idea what project I was working on. I was living in Florida at the time, packed up a moving truck, came to San Diego because I needed to be like on site for this. And actually driving to San Diego, I saw the first announcement trailer for Jedi Fallen Order. I was like watching it. I was watching it on my phone in the car and I was like, oh, that's sick. But like no part of me was like, that's what you're going to be working on.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got to the studio and they like, I walk in and I get my badge and they tour me around, show me where the mocap stage, where they do everything. And it was like a day at Disneyland. It was so exciting. They're like, here's, you know, where the character artists sit. And that's where we make that stuff. And it was so, so cool. And I'm thinking the whole time, like, this is where they made all the games that I love. Like,
yeah, like Uncharted 2.
Uncharted 2. And that was one of my manager, Doug, one of his first projects in this building, I think, was Uncharted 2. So we talked about that in my interview and he was super excited. I was a fan of it. And yeah, I was like, this is where the cutscenes for that were all done in this building. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. Went into his office. And we just continued talking. And then somewhere in the day, he was like, did anyone tell you what project you're on yet? And I said, no. And he goes, welcome to Star Wars. And I like just about fell on the floor. I was like, "That I'm a big Star Wars fan."
That's amazing.
I think my response was that I froze. I think I didn't say or respond, like say anything or respond at all. But I was really excited. So yeah, I couldn't have imagined that like coming up to the end of graduation, that less than a year later, I would be working on a Star Wars project. Like that wasn't anywhere in my head. I was like, I'm going to have to like really keep working my way up and probably do a lot of things I don't like before I get to do something I really like. And this worked out differently than I could have expected. Very, very differently.
That is such a dope story, man. Like, I've never heard anyone who was a magician that worked in that just like became a game animator before. That's so cool.
Well, to tie that back in too, I feel like magic prepared me in a weird way. Like, whatever you're doing before prepares you for the things that are coming. And you can take anything from anything. You can be working, you know, serving barbecue on the street corner. And there's something in that that's going to help you. If you want to be an astronaut, there's something about serving barbecue on the street corner that's going to help you be an astronaut. And you just have to find what it is. But for me, like for magic, I think it was the understanding movement, fluidity of movement, and how the eye perceives things, how to get people to look where you want them to look. So you're kind of directing the eye, which is a lot of animation. There's the things you don't think about in animation when you're watching it is the composition and what they're trying to get you to look at and where things are positioned and how they're moving. There's an element of deception in it, similar to magic, where you're trying to hide that this isn't a real world and make people believe that it is. You want to make them believe that that coin is in your hand, you know, but it's really not there. Yeah. So there's a connection there that I think helped a lot.
That's really cool. So I got to ask you, like, you've worked on so many cool projects, but you're also a gamer. What are you gaming on nowadays?
Ooh, so I'm replaying the 2018 God of War.
Okay, classic.
In preparation for Ragnarok. I started a little bit late, and I don't play as much as I'd like to. I sit down, like, some evenings when I have nothing else to do, and that's my time to, like, decompress after working or being out socializing or whatever. I like to come home and just sit down with the game, so reliving God of War. It's still amazing. You could have told me it came out this year and I'd believe you. It's that good.
It's a masterpiece.
A masterpiece for sure. So I'm really into that right now. Replaying Cyberpunk.
Back in Night City, huh?
Yeah, and it's fun. It's a really good time. I enjoyed it when it came out too. I played it on the PlayStation 4 somehow. Didn't have a lot of crashes. I felt like I got really lucky because I was on Twitter every night and everybody just be like, I had 20 crashes today. This is crazy. I can't do anything. Can't complete the mission. And I was like, I'm just having fun.
That's great. I was one of the lucky people who was playing it on a launch PS5. So like I never really experienced like the PlayStation 4-ness of Cyberpunk.
Yeah. The load times were long.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I heard they were bad.
But honestly, it's a great game. Mm-hmm. Really well crafted. It's one of my favorite open worlds at the moment. I like it. They just did a really good job of creating something that hadn't been done before.
The CD Projekt Red is really good about like creating worlds. Like they create really fantastic worlds, whether it be the Witcher series or Cyberpunk. And they make you feel like that world is livable, you know, like a real genuine ethos and lore behind the world, and like people feel like they're really there. So I'm like, I love what they're doing with Cyberpunk and Witcher.
Yes, yeah, both fantastic. And yeah, for an open world game, I didn't expect it to be what it was. Mm-hmm. It's still not perfect, you know. No, nothing ever is. I mean, maybe God of War, but yeah. But it's still a lot of fun. There's fun to be found and lots of lore.
Oh, it really is. I love the feature they have where like you're not locked into place when you're talking to someone. Like you can move around and still have that conversation, but like you're not stuck in like the Skyrim boxes, I like to call it, where like you're stuck and you have to like finish that conversation before you move on to another person.
Right. And if you want to get out of it, you just have to click like skip, 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 skip.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they really let you. You can walk away in the middle of something. Mm-hmm. Even like most of the main missions, you can do that too.
Yeah, for sure. Just walk away and then come back. You know, like just go about your business and then come back whenever you're ready to actually do the mission.
Right. It's funny too. There will be like a big major event happening and you can just leave and come back 2 days later and the same event's still happening. But then you're like, oh, great. I can pick up where I left off.
That's so dope. So you're playing God of War, you're playing Cyberpunk, anything else?
I think, you know, we just hit the 3-year anniversary of Jedi Fallen Order. And I think I'm going to replay that. I think I might stream it and talk about it. I've just been playing with that idea of like setting up all my streaming equipment again and playing through it. And I don't know what legally I'm allowed to talk about and whatnot in it. But I'd love to go through the scenes and just be like, I remember working on this, and this is what was going on, and this is the experience of it. Decisions we had to make. There are things I want to reveal that are not flattering, like that were changed, and like we had a better design here. They changed it on us last minute, you know. But I'm really proud of that game. Yeah, 3 year anniversary was like 3 or 4 days ago from the time we're recording this. So
that's cool. That's really cool. And it plays like a dream, you know. Like I'm going to replay that one right before the sequel. So like I'm like in the habit of always replaying the like predecessor before the sequel comes out. So I'm going to replay it. But like I definitely, that's one of the games I always have on my hard drive, just ready to go, just because I love like diving into that world.
Yeah, it's good. I love all the different planets. I haven't played it since the PS5 came out. So it'll be fun to see it playing a bit smoother and faster. And
those load times, man, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. So I have my PlayStation 4 upstairs and the 5 downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd forgotten. Sorry if you hear my cats hissing.
No, they're good.
They're having a fight. The load times, I had forgotten how slow the PS4 was. And I went and turned it on the other night and I was like, this is taking forever to load like an old game.
It really is. It's like one of those things to where like, I forgot what it was like to play a game where like the load times take so long that you can pick up your phone and just go about your business, like send out a couple of tweets and like just look up to see what everyone's doing. And then the game finally starts. Like I've forgotten that feeling.
Yeah. It's a nice perk on the 5. It helps with the immersion. Like there's less breaking up your experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I do like that. Like the load times are so fast on some games that it'll just put the little X in the corner when it's ready, which is almost instantly a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So you can choose to take a little break if you need to hit the button. I like that.
So, Brittany, I got to ask you, like, you've been, we know what you're playing right now. What have you been playing this year? Do you have a Game of the Year candidate?
Game of the Year candidate. You know, I'm really happy with everything that's nominated at the Game Awards.
A very solid list of games.
Very solid list. And Stray made it on there, I think. Which
I was shocked. I was legitimately shocked. I'm happy for Stray, but like I was shocked it made it.
I love seeing indie games get good attention and praise. So that was really, really nice. I haven't played it yet, but I anticipate God of War Ragnarok will take that award.
I think it's right down between God of War and Elden Ring. Those are the two behemoths going pound for pound.
Right. I'll say during development of the game, I could see some of the work going on in the studio. Mm-hmm. So I'd watch like some of the scenes and the work
that's
being
exciting.
Done, and I was just going like, this is going to win so many awards.
It is. It's a game that I've been playing for a little bit and I love it. Absolutely love it. It's one of the most beautiful, like well-designed worlds I've ever played. And like this story, not necessarily the main primary story, but the side stories that you get, just like in the first one where you're in the boat and Mimir is telling you like tales of like what happened even during his time and before his time. But like just like that, there's so many like really cool moments of just dialogue in there where I'm just like, I'm so immersed. Like it is one of those things to where like I know I'm supposed to be doing a side mission, but like I just want to sit in quote unquote the boat and just chill and listen to all these tales.
Oh, I love that. Love that. I can't wait to get into it. I'll say, you know, of the list, the only thing that I've actually I played two of the things. I played Elden Ring. Mm-hmm. And I didn't finish it. I did play
it. I haven't finished Elden Ring either, I'll be honest.
It's a bit much for me. Mm-hmm. I get why people love it. I love that feeling of exhilaration when you finally finish a boss fight. They're impossibly hard.
They really are.
But once you get through it, though, like that feeling of accomplishment, oh, so good. I texted my best friend, Dimitri. I texted him after I beat like one of my first big bosses. And I was like, I understand now. I get why you like this. Like, yeah. I feel it. Like, I feel the hormones. I feel the chemical excitement about this. But I hit a point finally where I was like, I can only beat my head over a rock so much. And then I have to stop. But I played a bit of that. And I played, obviously, Horizon Forbidden West, which I also worked on.
Love it.
And those are the only two that I've actually really, truly experienced. So I would say Horizon Forbidden West if I had to tell you what my game of the year is, but that's like the only thing I've played all the way through. And so it's kind of unfair for me to say it. And it's also something I worked on. So I feel like I can't say that.
I understand, but like, I love Horizon. I think like it is one of the, I hate how like overshadowed it's been because of like God of War and Elden Ring, because like it is an amazing game with extremely immersive, like the, it's so diverse in like the biomes that you play in. I'm like, there's so many cool things that I still discover about that game. Even as a person who got the platinum, there's so many cool little things about that that I just wish more people got a chance to like really just stick with and play.
Yes, absolutely. It's so, so good. It's my wife's favorite game too. She was a huge fan of Zero Dawn. And I worked on Forbidden West for quite a long time up here in our like bedroom. My office is set up like close enough to the bed where you can see it. It's in like a little corner. I have a like, little L-shaped desk. And I was able to hide that I was working on it the entire time that we
That's
were.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was in production. So she had no idea that I had anything to do with it until the night it came out.
That's fun.
Yeah. And she found out and she started crying. I was like, so that's what I worked on. She went and picked up her big box set. She pre-ordered the like special edition, or it was the Regala edition. So it had the, you know, figures and everything. And she comes home with this massive box from Best Buy. And then I told her I'd worked on it and she just burst into tears. And I was like, you weren't this emotional when I proposed. But this is it. This is the thing.
That's so funny. Like, I love that game. And I'm like, so many cool performances in that game as well. Like, Regala being like, I think it's Angela Bassett, right?
I'm not sure. I think so. She was amazing. She was amazing. Mm-hmm. So much intensity.
Oh my God, so much. It is one of those things to where I'm like, that was one of my favorite character performances in games in 2022. Cause like that was it's so much intensity, and then like so much passion behind every line that was delivered.
Yeah. I'm surprised. Did she get nominated? I don't think she did.
I don't think she did. I think like I know two people, Christopher Judge, I know Kratos, the guy who played Atreus. I think Sunny. One person from Plague Tale, I believe, who played Amelie's. I can't remember. Cool. Yeah, and then a couple of other people, but like some really strong nominees. Like, no, yeah, like not
Ashley Birch.
Yeah, for sure.
For Aloy, so really happy for her.
I'm like, it is not taking anything away from her, like all the other performances. I'm just surprised she didn't get nominated as well.
Yeah, me too. Now that you say it, I hadn't thought about it, but you're
that
right.
That was Angela Bassett. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, she did an incredible job.
Yeah, that's her second, like the second thing that's came out this year, that because she kills it in Wakanda Forever as well. So,
oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, it is one of those things to where like she absolutely killed it in that role. So, we talked about like your choice for game of the year, you know, even though you haven't played very many this year, we talked about like what inspired you to become an animator. What advice would you give to anyone who wants to be an animator, though, who wants to take that journey that you've kind of done?
I'd say really studying the fundamentals of animation. There are, you know, 12 principles of animation. Some people say there's 24. You can break them up. And these were discovered or developed by the 9 old men of Disney. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there are these old Disney legends, these guys that got together back in the early days and really just asked the question, like, what makes animation good? How can we break down and understand human movement of creatures and replicate that? Like, what are the things we need to have as our focus? And they created an incredible list, and understanding those is key to creating good animation. As I go like throughout my workday, I'm thinking through all the principles that the 9 old men created, you know, and it is a huge, huge help. And just being able to name them. So as you're working, something can look off, but you might not necessarily understand what it is. Your brain's telling you this movement, something that's happening here is wrong. And you as the animator have to identify what it is.
Ah, gotcha.
And understanding the principles helps you identify the problem and fix it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, getting into the history of animation, not necessarily what's being done right now, but like what they discovered back then, that is, I'd say, ground floor something. If animation is a specific area you want to go into, that's the thing that you want to focus on at first. And then just doing the work. Just do the work. I'd say also look at the people who are doing the things you want to do, study what they're doing, and replicate it. You know, nothing is completely original. So like that's one thing I did. I looked at specific animators who were working at the studios I wanted to work at. I reached out to them. That was one thing. I mean, people in the industry are so kind and so willing to help, especially if your goal is to join in and help create the stuff we create, because we love the stuff that we make and we want to continue doing it and making it better. And so most people you reach out to will be willing to offer advice or help. I reached out to animators at Disney Animation and all sorts of studios, DreamWorks and stuff, the places that I was most focused on, because I didn't necessarily want to go into gaming. I was an interest, but I wasn't sure. So I was focused on feature animation. And almost everyone I reached out to was so kind, kind enough to help me and give advice. And I'd upload stuff to Sync Sketch. They give me critiques. And this is just like having somebody to show your work to who is a professional who can give you a critique. That is such a huge help. And then being able to take their advice and actually apply it rather than taking it personally. Another thing, and this applies to that, is there's not a lot of room for ego.
Okay.
In these industries, maybe at the top. I think you're allowed ego if you're, say, Neil Druckmann or something.
Mm-hmm.
but otherwise, you have to be able to not take anything personally. I've had the tendency to really, what's the best way to say it? I really put a lot of myself into my art, and I see myself in it. And if I get a critique, it has been in the past something where I take that personally, you know, and I'd say, you're judging my art, you're judging me. And you really can't do that, because the art's going to get judged one way or another. And if you can take the critiques, take the judgment and not take it personally, you can apply what they're saying and you become better for it. So listening is a huge part of it. There's a lot of game development that happens in isolated areas where you're really just focused in doing your own thing. But when it comes to communicating with people and understanding what their needs are and being able to meet those needs, that is also a huge key part of it. Because if you can't do that, nothing's ever going to get done.
That's true. That's true. That's some good advice.
Thank you.
That's some very good advice. So I got to ask you, out of all the games you created, which game do you think is the best single player experience?
I have to say Last of Us Part 2.
Okay. That's a very strong one.
It is my number one single player game. And I played through it so many times. I say that because I enjoyed playing through it as a single player and experiencing the story. It's just such a beautiful blend of artistry and storytelling and gameplay. It's the full package. And I don't think we're gonna see many games like that.
You know,
it's special. It's special in its own way. And I think more people are inspired by it and going to try to replicate it. It's also a very expensive game to make, you know?
Yes. Yes.
We're trying to, behind every project, there's a business that is trying to sustain itself and improve and make money and please shareholders, right? So there's a, you know, money elements, there's timing. They have to keep production time down and cost down in order to sustain the business. With Naughty Dog has really earned, I think, the ability to not have to be as constrained by those things as other studios have, which is why they're able to create such great art. They can spend 7 years focusing on one beautiful thing and making it perfect.
And it's magnificent. It really is.
And the production time on other projects are not quite as gracious, you know. So it is a rare gem in the sea of games.
I understand. Do you have a favorite character in any of the games you created?
Oh my, yeah. You know, I want to name one that doesn't get a lot of credit in Star Wars. There's a character named Malikos, who he's a bit of a mysterious guy. He walks around barefoot, wearing a, you know, he's got a long beard and he wears this hood. And you kind of don't know what his deal is. And I'm not going to tell you what his deal is in case you haven't played the game, anybody listening. But it is, I think he is one of the most interesting, mysterious, and well-acted characters and most underrated characters. And the problem is he's not in the game a lot. But when you see him, like, he's interesting. And he's got a very interesting backstory.
Making sure I got the right character. He's on the red planet, right?
Yes, he's on Dathomir.
Dathomir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think he's so cool. The actor who played him, can't think of his name right now, but he put his whole heart and soul into that. Mm-hmm. And just delivered, every line is just delivered so beautifully. And I remember like working on the game. I did a couple scenes with him and I was watching his performances. I watched the mocap footage and use it as reference. And I just smiled every time I was watching this guy. I was like, he's doing so damn well. And I'm really proud of him.
Man, that's so cool. I will say like that, that's another game that's a really good single player experience, because like that game mm-hmm. is so damn good. And it has like one of the best cameos I've ever seen in a video game.
Ooh.
Like towards the end.
Yes, 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 mm-hmm. it does.
I've never, you know, like I'm not. Not to spoil anything, but like that cameo, like really just took my breath away. I was like, oh, let's go. Like I was so high.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like that childhood fear, you know?
Oh,
like,
same here.
I was like, oh, shit's going down.
Yes. Same here. I love it. I absolutely love it. So I'm like, another question before we have to go though, like you've worked on so many cool games and so many cool projects. What would be your dream one? Like what IP? Like something like you completely off the wall, like they said, we're making this type of game. What would be like your let's go moment?
Oh man. So I can't answer the question because I'm currently working on that thing.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So
my dream project.
Mm-hmm. You're working on your dream right now.
I'm working on my favorite thing I think I've ever done.
That is amazing.
This project's so good, and story's so good, and the game's going to be beautiful, and I'm not going to say what it is.
No, for sure don't. I want you to know, like, whenever this project comes out, I got to have you back on the show, because, like...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be your dream project. I got to hear about it.
Well, it's really cool. I got, years ago... I asked to be put on this project if it ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if a game like this ever happens, I want to do it. That's and amazing. I think what I literally said, I went to the person who I knew is responsible for casting mm-hmm. the animators. They'll look at the project, they look at the animators and their skills, and they kind of choose, you know, mm-hmm. what each person would be good for. And I made my plea, and I think I said I would cut off a body part. to work on this. I was like, what, just say the word and mm-hmm. I'll get something taken off to do
that's
this.
Really cool.
And and they listened. So
that's cool. So congratulations, really, man.
Thank you. I also got promoted twice on this project, so I was not senior animator at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes with more responsibility and obviously harder work, so I've been able to put my best stuff into this.
Oh, and double congratulations, man.
Thank
Two
you.
Promotions.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. It was a big year. So, it's not just the project itself, but the work that I've been able to do on it is the work I'm most proud of. And I can't wait for the world to see it. Eventually,
man, I'm excited.
We'll have to do a follow-up.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So I will ask you then. So like answering, like I'll pivot to another question that you probably can't answer. What is your most anticipated game to as a like a gamer that's coming out in the near future that you want to play?
Ooh, wow.
So this is any studio outside of, you know, you can do one outside of PlayStation. So you.
Okay. Well, I would have said God of War Ragnarok, but that's out now. It's still my most anticipated because I haven't played it yet.
I understand.
what else do we have on the list here? We have...
Let's see. You have... Outside of PlayStation, you have what? Like Starfield. You have Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, Hogwarts Legacy. This is just off the top of the head. No snub to anybody, but like...
Okay.
Off the top of the head, I'm thinking like you have those. You also have the EA projects, which are like Iron Man and like all those.
Oh, right.
All those kind of games. You also have, there's a lot of different ones out there. It just kind of depends.
Yeah. Okay. So, man, there's so much I'm looking forward to. I appreciate the outside of PlayStation options because I'm so zoned into what we're doing at the studio.
Yeah, for sure.
That I know all the upcoming PlayStation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously mine is the most, my most anticipated.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I'm going to have to say Hogwarts Legacy. I understand J.K. Rowling has been problematic, but, you know, I love that world. And I've been waiting, I feel like, my whole life to run around Hogwarts and to explore that castle and to do all that stuff. And they're giving us finally the opportunity on a silver platter. And I'm going to, you know, as soon as that comes out, I'm in it. I'm really big Harry Potter fan here.
Same here. So I'm excited for Hogwarts Legacy as well. I'm a big Potter head as well. Like, and I can't wait to represent Hufflepuff.
Yeah, Ravenclaw here.
Okay.
I saw like the Hufflepuff house has one of the coolest entrances.
Did they do the kitchen? Room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know about the kitchen, but the common room entrance. I just remember I watched like a couple little clips on YouTube and the way that the door like opens up, I was like, oh, it's beautiful.
That's gonna be pure fun. Magic. That's gonna be fun. I hate that there's no Quidditch though. That I'm like, that feels like something that I would have least liked to at least try to play a little
they
bit.
They gotta add it on as like a DLC or something.
For sure.
You know, big that'd be too big of a missed opportunity.
For sure. So Britton, I gotta say thank you so much for being on the show. Before we go though, where can good people find you?
I'm on Instagram as Britton V. So Britton like Great Britain and then just the letter V for my last name. Twitter, I think, is exactly the same. Those are the two best places to find me. I post stuff occasionally about games, what I'm working on, or I'll do Instagram stories. I did one earlier this week for the anniversary of Star Wars where I went through and talked about clips and certain scenes that I worked on and the development process. So that was really fun. Occasionally that'll be what I do. I also post a lot of weird stuff. So just prepare yourselves, really into spirituality and Ram Dass. So, you know, like you're going to get a lot of that. Just a warning. People follow me for the game stuff and they're like, what is the rest of this?
It's so cool.
Instagram, Twitter, two best places to find me. LinkedIn as well. If you're a professional looking for advice or trying to get into the industry, LinkedIn's a great place to meet up and chat about all that kind of stuff.
Okay. One last question before you go, though. I usually ask my guests like this question, and I always get like really cool responses, sometimes weird ones. And I gotta ask you, if Kirby absorbed you, what kind of power would Kirby get?
Oh my gosh, what a question. What kind of power? You know, powerlessness?
I'm sure he'd get some kind of magic ability, you know.
Magic like. Ability, maybe. Maybe, like, can give better hugs. I'm a very lovey person.
Okay.
And really just like to embrace people. So maybe that's it. I was, you know, woke up this morning and I'm just reading and thinking about, like, it's just funny. The first thing I opened my book to was, like, you gain all the power in the world when you don't want powers anymore. Like, basically, like, kind of a thing. Like, you can only have the thing that you don't want and vice versa in, you know, spiritual life, right? So maybe that's what I was focusing on this morning. I was like, I'm just getting rid of all my wants. So maybe no powers, maybe all the powers.
Yeah.
maybe just hugs. So that was a really weird answer.
No, I like it.
Great question.
I like it. So Britton, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And I can't wait to have you back as a follow-up after the big project comes out.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and great to get to know you too.
Oh, for sure. You as well. And I will talk to you next time. See you, Britton. Awesome.
Thank you so much.
So that's it for today's show. I want to give a special shout out and thank you to Britton for being on today's show. He's such a great guest and I can't wait to have him back. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you want me or my community of gamers to give you feedback on your video game backlog list, then join us in the Single Player Experience Discord server. Once you're in, feel free to share your backlog list or just talk about good single player game experiences that you've had lately. The link to join the free Single Player Experience Discord server is in the show notes. I want to thank you so much for listening to today's episode, and I hope to catch you in the next one. I'll let you boy later. Peace.